Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Castle. And here we are after a brief, I guess, a week vacation. We had to, we'll explain all about that. We had couldn't do the podcast last week. And now everything's going crazy. We've got the Cubs in the playoffs, or at least they haven't been eliminated yet. I've had to write, I wrote two columns, one eliminated Cubs, one
right,
happy Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and it's easier to write the eliminated. The
for
sad
you,
one.
Yes.
No, I just thought, you know, why? Because, you know, you're going to go to McNally's Tap yourself.
Mm, I'm, okay? You know, yeah, I guess I'm guilty as charged.
Christian McQuarrie, John Cass, and behind the glass, our friend and co-host of the Chicago Way, Jeff Carlin. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
So we've got pillars of the Republic about to collapse. The media is pulling its hair out saying, why, Trump, why are you saying that this whole thing is rigged? How dare you? I think E.J. Dion's lost all his hair now from all this. And the Cubs, as we said. Christian's here, you're here. But we missed last week, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. And that was that was my fault. You know, fault isn't
not
the word.
Your fault,
but,
man.
But unfortunately, my uncle, which we've talked about on the podcast before, mm-hmm. My uncle passed away. 81, Bob Connolly. He was his, for those who are catching up, Bob Connolly, his father was Matthew Connolly, who was the personal secretary to Truman. So my uncle has quite an interesting history. He was a jazz musician, traveled, you know, the country, played with Louis Armstrong at one point in his life, and actually turned me on to radio and the concept of, like, the theater of the mind. So, in fact, John, you once talked to my uncle on the phone,
mm-hmm.
because my aunt made some comment, sent a comment into the Tribune about an article you wrote, because they were staunch liberals. And you called, and there was music playing, and you're like, well, you said, what's going on in there? What's happening in the background? And I don't remember the name of this, the artist escapes me, but my aunt tells the story to this day that, oh, I talked to John once, and we talked to him, and we were playing music, and he was curious about why we were disagreeing with him and so upset with him, and it was a very nice conversation, and I really like that John Cass,
see?
Even if I don't agree with him.
That's the way. That's the Eddie Haskell way.
Yeah. I've started a little collection of pictures on my cell phone. Every time I walk out of the building outside of Trib Tower, John is standing there talking to somebody, a cop. You know, I think he gets recognized, and people talk to him. And
what is that? Yeah, you stopped me the other day. Who
yeah.
are you with?
I was with Jessica Reynolds, who also works here at the Tribune, and she had gotten a picture of you talking to some women a couple weeks ago in the, like, African garb. And I think it's both that people recognize you, you're very approachable, and you're a curious person. You just talked about that. So I think you kind of feed off of just talking to people outside, right outside the building when you're having a smoke, standing next to the planter. You will always find John Cass, right?
Well, it's just nice to talk to people that are nice.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they don't have a boning knife in their hand, I'd be pleased, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, because mm-hmm. we talk to readers, right? This is what we're doing here. Except you guys can't talk to me, although you, us. Although they did file send in some stuff on Facebook we might try to get to. Don't you like being outside the Tribune Tower and people looking up at it and wondering, what's it going to be turned into?
Mm.
A casino?
Apartments or something, probably.
Apartments.
But I'm much more introverted. I don't want to talk to people. I prefer just to live my little,
wait
in
a
my
second.
Little shell.
Don't tell me you don't. When you were in Springfield, okay, or you're on the South Side where you're well-known in political circles throughout the city, particularly when you were a younger, you were a reporter at the South, right?
Yes, I was.
You'd go to a night political meeting in some gym at a, you know, or a school,
sure.
And everyone, a forum, and everyone would say, Christian McQuarrie's here, right? And you talked to
people. I don't know.
Yes, you did.
I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I'm talking on Saturday at a church in my neighborhood about some issues that are on the ballot. So
you're talking
still do that.
Church.
Bethany United Church, Unitarian Church, 103rd and Longwood. I'm going to be there at 7 o'clock talking about the Safe Roads Amendment and some other things that are on the ballot.
Are they
and
paying?
No. No.
I'm talking to
there some. There will be, you know, myself and maybe two other people there.
Oh, good.
But yeah, stop by, listeners, if you're in the neighborhood.
Yeah, bring some donuts or something.
Sure.
Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to do that, to do those little forums, you know? You guys ever do that in radio? Or because you're talking, you don't want to do it?
Right. Well, we do a lot of talking, you know, just on air. So, but there are forums. I mean, when I've produced for other stations, you know, we set it up. I used to work for John Howell over at LS.
Right.
And I set him up with Commissioner Boykin had a violence and crime, gun violence.
Oh, the West Side guy.
His first term. He did some throwing in it. It was all about, you know, kind of the black community and how they are need to kind of address their issues. And Howell was like, oh, I'll go for it, sure. And he was unfortunately the only white guy there, so he felt out of place. But they, you know, it was a very good conversation. But that was kind of as close as we've gotten to a.
You do like a remote. Haven't I done this with you when we worked at station? We did like we've done remotes, right? Or I've done them with others.
Yeah, did the
Don
lunch.
Lee Roma would do stuff. I would, you know, like at the Allerton, and then everyone sees you during commercial break. Or
yeah,
lunch, right.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of fun, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
we should take our podcast on the road.
Yeah.
Have us?
I know just the place.
Who'll have us out
I
there?
I just found my diner. You know, I've been on a search for a diner.
Yes, where?
Can I tell? I won't say it in the paper, but I'll say it in the podcast. All right. It's called the Cozy Cup, and it's on Joliet Road. And there's a guy, a Greek guy named Pete, who is behind the counter. And that's all I need to know.
Which town?
It's like near Countryside.
Okay.
So I
Cozy Cup with a K?
C's, I don't know.
Okay.
I've been driving past this place for years, and I always thought it was a bowling alley, which it is. It's like a bowling alley. But there's a diner
next to
it.
Seems misnamed. Oh, okay.
So I never really noticed it. Finally, I'm like, what? A diner? I pull in. Perfect. A counter, little booths. You know, patty melt on the menu. What else do you need to know, right? And everyone comes in and out and talks like, you know, just neighborhood people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do they serve the coffee in the little mugs that are, you know, heavy ceramic?
I love.
You got to have the hot coffee in the ceramic mug.
Can you drink coffee in any other kind of mug at home?
No, I don't. At work, I'd use these.
Yeah.
Styrofoam. But you can only get, there's a diner mug that's different from, you know, the mugs you collect over time. It's that off-white, really heavy, round lip type mug.
Yeah, you get them at the restaurant supply store. There's a place on 55th Street east of LaGrange Road where you can get them.
What did you eat at the diner?
Two eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Greek toast, of course.
Yes.
Coffee, hash browns, bacon.
Nice. Perfect. And it was probably, $4?
Wasn't that expensive? Mm-hmm. And I know I love reading all these great food stories in the Tribune. I love talking to Jeff about different restaurants and all that. When you really come down to it, I'm more of a diner guy. I'm more of I'm a steak and potatoes guy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, do I like making fancy stuff? But really, I just like the diner. Is it weird?
No, I think the diner atmosphere is sort of comforting. You can almost hear it, you know, the clinking of the glasses and
Hi, honey. What do you want, hon?
Right. Everyone's sweetie or sweetheart.
How you doing, darling?
Do you want a big Greek or a small Greek
with
anchovy?
I almost miss when restaurants had smoking sections. And I know that sounds bizarre because I'm not a smoker, but it wasn't too long ago where you had a smoking section and a non-smoking section. But of course, it drifted over. And that was sort of part of the diner experience, too. You know, somebody having coffee and a smoke at the counter.
Your coffee, your smoke, newspaper, breakfast of champions, right?
Yep. Amen.
You know, and that is, terrible. No one should have to smell smoke. Horrible, terrible habit, deadly, and blah, 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 blah. But it was interesting. You'd see interesting people.
Sure.
You know, do you ever see anybody interesting at a bar anymore? Come on. You'd see interesting people, right? People would talk. Now they just go.
And people have their guard down a little more at a diner, you know.
Right.
It's food, right?
Yeah, it's more casual and relaxed.
I want to know patty melt, and then what are maybe two or three other items that have to be on the menu for it to qualify?
Corned beef hash.
Corned beef hash. Good one. Okay.
Yeah, the corned beef hash.
How about a franchisee?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what that is.
You don't know what a franchisee
is? No.
A franchisee is a Polish sausage wrapped in bacon, deep fried, and stuffed with cheese, correct?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. I've never heard of such a thing.
A franchisee?
Yeah. I'm not hanging out in the right diners.
Right?
I was going to say liver and onions.
Mm. Oh, man. That's good.
Yeah, it's not a real diner unless you have like liver and
onions. When's the last time you had it?
Liver and onions?
Yeah.
It's the one thing I don't eat. Ugh. It's my father's fault.
Jeff just fell on the floor thinking of glands.
Yeah, that's yucky. I was a waitress at Denny's throughout high school and a little bit into college, and liver and onions was on the menu there, and I was so nauseated every time somebody ordered it, and I had to deliver it, and it smells like dog food.
They don't know how to cook it.
Is that what it is? You eat it?
Yes.
I worked at Baker Square.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Did you have to wear the polyester?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Al Gore. You don't cook it till it's shoe leather, okay? It's sautéed, thinly sliced calf liver, sautéed. It is perfect with a little lemon, oregano. Oh, my God. It tastes so good.
I'm getting a little throw up in my mouth as we're talking. Yeah. I mean, it is the actual liver of an animal. You know, the liver that's supposed to clean out all the toxins, so it's just full of garbage.
Do you like
right?
oysters?
I do.
What are they but livers of the sea?
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
They are?
What are you talking about?
They have lots of like bacteria in
them. That's what they do. They skim the sea.
What?
Water goes in, water goes out. Stuff goes in, stuff goes out. It gets bigger and bigger. What do you think it gets bigger on?
I don't know. What? What does it get bigger on?
It eats like microscopic particles.
Algae and stuff.
Oh, man. I love oysters and mussels.
Mussels are worse.
Where do you go for oysters? I know they're hideously expensive, but where do you go?
I mean, I have been told numerous times to really be careful where you get oysters because they're so prone to bacteria. So
like Denver, I wouldn't go to drive to Denver.
If you order oysters in Denver, you get something else.
I've had
Shaw's Crab House around here, the very best and
what
finest
about that
oysters.
Other place? Shaw's is great. There's another place like the Oyster House or something like that.
We'll check out the place in Des Plaines.
Oh, man, that place.
They were just on Check, Please.
They were.
Yeah. Really?
You know what we're talking about?
I want to be on Check, Please. Have you ever been on Check, Please?
No.
Have you, Jeff?
No.
Let's do it.
We're pitching right now. Okay.
WTTW, we want to be on.
The three of us.
Yeah, yes. That'd be great.
And you know what? I'll be the guy. There's always one guy on Check, Please that aggravates.
Right.
There's always like there's like the woman who's like friendly, like you're the friendly. I'll try everything. Everything's good. Then there's a guy like Jeff. He loves his food, and he's also going to give good props to the other people's food. And I'll say something like, "And it was good service and excellent," or the huevos rancheros were great, or something, whatever. Right.
Right.
And then there's the other guy, and that's me, the kind of
grumpy,
anal retentive,
fastidious.
Very fastidious. That's me, right? Fastidious. Very skinny, very hip dress, maybe cuff my jeans or something.
Right.
And
cuff your jeans.
Right? And I have to be bitchy about everybody else's food. Why do they have that guy? Whoever that guy is.
I know. There's a guy, it's a guy like who's real, critiques are like real on point. But then you question whether or not they really know anything about food.
Or maybe they never tasted food.
Right.
He knows about
Chef
food.
Chef Boyardee is like Italian to them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I would love to do that Check, Please.
Yeah, it's sort of on my bucket list. So there, words out.
All right.
Gotta do it.
They should do it that way. That would be awesome.
I already have a place.
I already have my place.
Absolutely.
Where?
Well, I'll wait. I'm not going to reveal it. No, you have to have me on Check, Please if you want to know my favorite Southside restaurants. Yeah.
How about you, Jeff?
Oh, I know. I would probably, if it hasn't been done already, I'd probably do Pauline's Diner right down this, like, literally five buildings away.
Do you have one of those 24-hour diners there?
No, they just do breakfast and brunch.
That's not a diner.
But
not Cozy Cup. Cozy Cup is 2 in the morning.
But they're open.
I want rice pudding, I go there.
6 to 3, 365.
6 to 3, most people are working. They don't have time to go to a diner. You have to go to a diner at, like, 5 o'clock or after 6. Where's time? They're in 6 and 3.
It's great.
It is, huh?
All right, and John?
What would I do?
You'd have to think about it.
Do I have to pick a Greek place to make all my uncles happy? You know,
maybe. Like, you might. You might have to.
They had this thing on Check, Please, this recent episode. Boston Fish Market, right?
Yeah.
And it's in Des Plaines. It is outstanding. Do you like seafood?
Yes, I think we talked about this place. Do you sit outside?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, we already did our Chinese version?
See, this is what happens when you start to repeat yourself. This is what we do in my family. You gently raise your index finger like this, and that's the signal to you. I've already heard the story, John.
Shut up,
it.
John. Okay.
No, I'm just raising
the whiskey talking,
it's just
crow.
Just a little signal. Right. I have to do this with some of my family members who repeat themselves.
Are they as old?
Incessantly.
As old as I am?
Older. Older. Yeah. So all you right. just filed okay. a column. Tell us what
oh,
your
yeah.
takeaway was.
I got to file a column on, I don't know, I think a clown lady called me. One of the clown, real clowns. She was a sad clown crying.
Oh, no.
Like yeah. a tramp?
No, she's a sad clown thinking, because she read a column about crazy clowns or creepy clowns.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants me to do a column on good clowns. And that's creepy because I really don't want to, you know, but I might do it anyway, because who knows if the Cubs win or lose on Saturday. I might have to have
you have
a
to have something.
Holder.
Yeah, you might have to have a placeholder.
That's kind of terrible. Like, here's your real story, and you really care about everything, and it's very important to you, and I'm just treating
it's
it
the
as a
throwaway column. But throwaway. She should be glad she's getting some coverage if
I don't
John
know.
Cass.
Funny how?
What?
Just, you know, you're funny.
You mean, so? Man, let me understand this, because I, you know, maybe it's me, I'm a little f***ed up, maybe. But I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
I'm not just... You know how you tell a story? What?
No, I don't know. You said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. How the fuck am I funny? What the fuck is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's...
Who is the clown? Who is the fool? Which one knows he is playing? And which one is last in the game? This world ain't a wasteland, just tastes that way sometimes. Depends on the angle, on how you read your lines. For every brick we've stacked and come together to build is a sick little crack in this foundation still. Humans, I can't accept them, trying to understand what fuels them and their essence. I'm looking for some leverage, catch up, trying to catch me. Curse it, depress it, here to make you happy. Hey daddy, tell me why the clown is crying. Well son, he's got the task of cheering up the ill and dying. On top of that, everybody thinks he's insane, can't fathom why he'd want to ease their pain. Walking through this maze made of concrete walls, when you're not allowed to climb, there's no way to possibly fall. When your hands are restricted to hold nothing but self, how can you get a grip? How can you pick up what you dealt? The clown stays sad, the ground stays hard with a couple pounds of my
weight. I wrote a piece that's in today's paper, which is Thursday, an editorial. You know, everyone's up in arms about Donald Trump using the word rigged to describe the election, and he's attacking democracy. And I just go through all the ways in which actually elections around here are somewhat rigged.
Interesting. Because I wrote a similar thing for my column.
Oh, did you? Okay. Yeah.
It was about the Associated Press coming out with, and then all these other liberals coming out with, the foundation pillars of the Republic are cracking because Donald Trump is now the evil Samson in the temple, or the goddess Kali. You know, he's going to destroy everything because he dared say it was rigged.
Right. And we make the point in the editorial. It was actually a column that we had to turn into an editorial because mm-hmm. we had a big blank space on the page.
Christian, you got something.
Yeah. Can you do that? You know, he is exaggerating, and it's very hyperbolic to suggest that there is some massive effort that's going to tilt the presidential election nationwide. But the idea of voters feeling like the system is rigged is very real. And if you live in Illinois, you should pretty much feel this way all the time. And I have so many examples. I won't even get into all of them. But all my years, you mentioned the Southtown covering the South suburbs, which was primarily Democrats. You know, not a lot of Republican voters have much of a say in the South suburbs. So it was the Democratic Party that I was constantly covering. And the dirty tricks that they pull in order to get their guys elected, you know, to get the white guy elected in a black district, they would pack the ballot with African-American sounding names of candidates who didn't exist. And I would go knock on their doors. And it was an abandoned house. They would put people up who I remember knocking on one woman, a woman who had an Irish sounding name to confuse voters from another, the real candidate who they didn't want, knocked on the door. Her mother was home babysitting her children. Mom had no idea her daughter was running for office. I mean, just all the stuff like that that they do to try to tip elections. Remember when Jesse Jackson Jr. ended up on the ballot? His rivals found another person named Jesse Jackson to run against him.
I love that one.
An elderly truck driver they recruited. I mean, is that not rigged? To me, that's rigged. And look at how we have little say in redistricting reform and term limits and all of these things that we would love to have on the ballot. But the system is rigged. The Democratic leaders won't put it on the ballot. The Supreme Court upheld tossing of redistricting reform. If that is doesn't feel like a rigged system, what is it?
The Supreme Court tossed the independent ballot, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that Supreme Court is predominantly run by Democrats, right?
Yes, it's a majority Democratic, and they run too, so they are elected.
And who gives money to the Democrats running for judge?
A lot of Democratic Party of Illinois money.
Mm-hmm. But who's the chairman of the Democratic Party?
Michael Madigan.
Dun, dun, dun. Thank you.
Yeah.
No further questions, Perry Mason.
Maybe excuse, Judge. Yeah. So anyway, I just, all of this, you know, the media, especially even some CNN commentators were like, oh, how dare he suggest the system is rigged? You know, come to Illinois and spend some time here, and then you'll understand that just the feeling that your vote does not matter, or that your opinion doesn't matter, because in many ways it is rigged.
See, that's what Trump, and I wrote about this, that's what Trump threatens the establishment on. When you start calling out the system as being rigged, you're threatening their money and their way of life. The way the Republicans and Democrats want this, a Democrat in the presidency, Republicans control the Congress. All the K Street boys come out with their checkbooks and everybody gets happy. Okay. And they deal on the margins. When he starts saying rig this, rig that on the media, they get offended. But didn't WikiLeaks expose Donna Brazile, the CNN playing games, given the
we've seen that a couple
questions
times.
And
there was a political reporter who let the DNC edit his piece beforehand.
Right.
Donna Brazile,
major newspapers and websites,
right?
Because 98%. And here's the thing: I think Trump really is a buffoon. I don't want to surprise anybody.
Dun dun dun.
But I think that his people aren't. His people aren't. They're real, and they have real concerns. And they've been lied to by Democrats and Republicans alike, and now they're mocked as deplorable fools. And we do it. The media does it.
Right. And you saw Hillary's campaign operatives at the DNC, Jan Schakowsky's husband, planting people at rallies in order to rile them up so that the media would come and cover it and make Donald Trump's supporters all look like buffoons, really.
Bob Cramer.
To borrow your word.
Mm-hmm. You know what I once wrote about Bob
Cramer? No, what?
When he was found guilty, the judge, Moran, federal judge, had some connection to Cramer's political but didn't recuse himself.
Mm-hmm.
No one asked, he said, so why should he? And what I said was, every time tax is raised, a liberal gets his wings.
I remember that. I remember that column.
It makes me feel like the angel Clarence in It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm. That was the Bob Cramer.
I'm getting the raised finger that I'm repeating myself.
John was giving it to himself.
I was just giving it to myself.
Oh, okay. All right. You have to move it up slowly like this.
I should just stick it in my nose and shut up.
I know, Kristen, we got to get you back to your official duties, but I'd love to get your quick take on the amendments that are proposed, just so people hear. I know you're going to talk about this weekend, but if you could give us a quick cursory, because I know that the Rhodes Amendment is something that a lot of people see and think.
Doesn't want safe roads?
Right.
You must be an awful person if you don't want safe roads. The Safe Roads Amendment will likely pass. What it does is put money that is set aside for transportation that you pay at the pump through taxes or when you go to renew your driver's license. All that money is supposed to be spent on roads and bridges and infrastructure statewide. Because the state is such a fiscal mess and lawmakers have no discipline, they continually sweep that fund and spend it on other state services. So this is a constitutional amendment to put that money in a lockbox. Sounds very reasonable, but it shouldn't. We should be voting this down for a couple of reasons. One, it removes flexibility for the state if we do have some sort of emergency to tap into that money. And more from my perspective, it's the principle of it. The legislative leaders will not let us vote on redistricting reform. They will not put term limits on the ballot, but they will cater to the interests of the road building industry and the lobbyists and all the people, you know, the construction workers and the unions and everyone who would benefit from this. They get their question on the ballot. We're going to change the Constitution, add an amendment for transportation, but you won't let us vote on these other issues. So to me, it's the principle. I'm a no on the Safe Roads Amendment.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Yes. I just got something from a reader from WikiLeaks, you know, the WikiLeaks. This is Bill Daley and John Podesta ripping on Rahm.
Oh, nice.
So it starts off, Bill Daly, how you doing? Podesta, breezing along with the breeze. You, Bill? Oh, I'm just watching Rom twist. Podesta, sounds like he's stabilized, but I thought BB was going to lose. And then says, yes, I think his high water mark isn't very high.
Mm. Ouch. See?
Wow.
That's one thing about the WikiLeaks that we really didn't get into, which is they leak on each other. It's like the inter-party fights with these people, right? Now, Rom's going to be like, damn you, Bill.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's
you
funny.
Hurt my feelings.
Marco Rubio was warning about this, too, saying, you know, you guys, us GOP, we can pound on this all we want, but remember, this is going to come around and bite us in the ass because there's surely stuff out here that in
are
emails.
Are you speaking to him particularly or what?
No. Rubio said that. I don't. He came out and was warning that, hey, look
oh,
out.
Oh, he was warning that people
that the
would
GOP,
be bitten in the behinds.
Right, so the GOP is guilty of similar things and that it's just everybody's playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that, watch out, because don't be surprised if we get chewed out. But on the Bill Daly note, he's going to be our guest on our podcast next week.
That's what we can talk to him about.
Great.
Okay,
that'll good. Be wonderful.
Better than running into him in, you know, in the Serenity Garden next door like it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. It should be interesting to talk about him. That and the whole, you know, pillars of the Republic and how important they are. So we should threaten the system. I guess we should never call for hanging Chad examinations that last a month. Well, with Al Gore.
You can ask him about the remap amendment. He was a big supporter of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you could ask him too, because I hope you'll be here.
Well, maybe I will. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
We have so many adversaries overseas. Can we all agree to be frenemies?
I would work with our allies in the Middle East. That's the only way we're going to keep the peace.
Okay.
Mosul, so sad.
It's a catastrophe.
So bad.
Can everyone achieve the American dream? Or should they sign up for my Ponzi scheme?
We are gonna go where the money is.
All right.
We are gonna help small business is.
Our jobs are being sucked out of our economy. Right now, our country is dying. Big three.
Why should you run the show?
We've gotta do more.
Tell us, cause we need to know.
We need to give the drug dealers
two more weeks until we vote.
You get shot walking through the store.
Who should really
Donald got into a Twitter war.
For the Supreme Court, who would you choose? Please don't say me, I'm a busy dude.
The Supreme Court, it's what it's all about. The Second Amendment is under such trauma.
I understand and respect gun ownership. I hope the Senate confirms the nominee for President Obama.
To stop a Cold War, what should we be doing? Would you go bum wrestle Vladimir Putin?
Putin. This is not my best friend. He's our spotted Hillary, and she's playing chicken. Look at the startup they signed.
You are willing to spout the Putin line. These cyber attacks from the Kremlin are designed to influence our election. Putin has a very clear favorite in this race. He'd rather have a puppet as president of the United States.
And now joining us is my friend, Tom Bevan, co-founder, publisher of the Real Clear Politics website with Real Clear News, Real Clear Religion, Real Clear
Science,
Real Clear. What else is there? Real Clear, Tom?
Coming soon, Real Clear Investigations, actually.
Ooh.
Yes. Investigative journalism at its finest.
Now, he already added A.B. Stoddard, one of my favorites, his group. He just keeps, you know, you're becoming a media tycoon, not the guy that was hanging out with me and you and Milt Rosenberg, like, in the middle of the night
right.
a few years ago. Now you're big. I see him on Fox. Everyone's talking about the Real Clear Politics Average.
Yeah.
Do not suggest that I am part of the media elite, John.
You, as an elite, you do use the proper fork and knife at lunch, I've noticed. You work from the outside going in, but I wouldn't say that's elite.
Thank you.
Although at the debate, which were this week, presidential debate, the last one between Trump and Clinton, I noticed that the media elite, or say the guard, the Praetorian Guard of the establishment, or whatever you want to call them, is outraged that Trump would dare suggest that this system is rigged. And the AP, and I noticed, I went to Real Clear this morning and read all the interesting stuff on both sides of this issue, and the AP said something like the foundation, threatening the foundations of the pillars of the Republic. Donald Trump refused to say whether he'd concede if he lost. Are the foundations of the pillars of the Republic being threatened now?
I think they'll survive. I mean, look, this is just another example of the media's sort of hyperventilation over something. I mean, I just don't quite understand it. You know, the idea that Donald Trump is going to, look, he's been saying the system is rigged, right, against him and against Republicans in general. And most of the time he's talking about that, he's right. talking about the media and the coverage that he's received. And I think, you know, he can make that argument. I think there is a decent argument to be made that the media has been putting their thumb on the scales against him. I think there's a general consensus within the media elites that, you know, they are horrified at the idea of him being president.
This vulgarian with his knuckles dragging on the ground. Exactly. Right.
And so, he suggests that he's not willing to say at this debate, that the system is rigged. And I mean, this, you would have thought that he had, I don't even know, set off a nuclear device in downtown Chicago. I mean, it's just craziness.
It was. The reaction, I think, though, proves his point. Now, if you don't like Trump, if you're a Clintonista, you might say he changed the subject from groping women to whether he's a sore loser. If you're a Clinton loather or a Trump supporter, or maybe just a supporter of the Republic, you might say he changed the subject from groping women to this business of the rigged election and the domination of a certain ethos or way of thinking that's bent against him and most conservative principles, even though he's not a conservative.
No, and look, conservatives were quick to point out that, Hillary Clinton was, while she was Secretary of State, she was, abroad talking about how the 2000 election was stolen. She was just campaigned in Miami with Al Gore last week.
Right.
And nodded along, with the idea that he actually won that election. It was stolen from him. So,
right.
I mean, please, there's just the sort of hypocrisy and all of that. And the idea that, we need fainting couches now because Donald Trump is, it's too much.
It's like Victorian vapors. Yeah,
exactly. It's actually kind of a fitting coda to this election in the sense that the media grabs on to something that Trump says and just blows it up into this, apocalyptic vision or idea. And it really makes them look, I think, at least some of them, and certainly in the way that it's being portrayed, foolish. I mean, just foolish because it's nonsense.
So what did you think of how will the next week be, or what do you see as to the future of how this discussion will be based on the debate? Who did what now?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the debate was sort of act three of the same play. We've seen the first two acts. It went sort of according to the plots, right? Trump scored some points. Clinton was obviously well-informed and came off as, authoritative and, all of those things. I don't think what happened yesterday really is going to change the sort of trajectory of this election, whatever you think that trajectory is or might be. Again, I think the media's hyperventilation will cause, the next 48 hours of this sort of scrum and heavy breathing. And eventually, though, I think, and I think we saw some of this happen with the accusations, allegations. Is that there will be a little bit of a backlash, I think, by Trump supporters and maybe independent voters or moderate voters who are just, because the media just seems so obsessed and sort of hysterical. I suspect this is going to die down and we'll have, sort of the sprint to the finish here.
Why is that? Why
is what?
I mean, I've always felt, 30 years in this business, that most people in the media are liberal, but that's because people who are conservative usually go into philosophy, history, the law, or business, and they don't go into media as much. Outside of that, it's now become like a weird secular priesthood of the left, like what used to pass for universities. It's the same type of thing.
As someone who came into this business from the outside,
right.
And starting this, website 16 years ago, I was in advertising. John McIntyre, the co-founder, he was a trader.
Right.
We were not involved in politics or journalism professionally. We lived in Chicago, outside of the media bubble, Washington, D.C., New York. And so to sort of build this brand that is that exist in that world and yet not be from that world, it has been really eye-opening to come and get inside the bubble and sort of look around and be like, oh, my God, you know, all of these folks are, a lot of them are really liberal. And guess what? They all went to the same schools and they're married to each other and they hang out and they get together and just sort of talk. And you can see exactly how and why the media has this sort of herd mentality, conventional wisdom that is always coming from the liberal perspective. They all think of themselves as really objective and right. and professional and all that. But you look at the top ranks of all the big media organizations, they're all, you know, basically folks who are, you know, liberal and live in liberal environments and liberal bubbles, whether it's on the, you know, Upper West Side of Manhattan, Upper East Side, or, you know, in the areas surrounding Washington, D.C. And so that's how the news coverage gets shaped. And when they are offended by something collectively, this is what happens.
I don't really mind that they have politics different from mine.
No, I'm concerned.
Right. No, I know.
I've come to like a lot of these folks and I just, that's not where I come from. And so I look at when something like this happens and I look at it, I'm sitting here in my office in Chicago,
right,
looking at this hysteria that's going on in the Beltway. And I was just at the debate, you know, I didn't go to the Vegas debate, but I was at the last two debates.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the media's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these folks are all in the same room and they're all wandering around, you know, chit-chatting about what's, you know, how the debate went and who did what and all that. And when something like this happens, it's like a collective gasp, like, oh, my gosh. Can you believe?
Like they're the popular girls who are going to shame somebody because they didn't do the right thing.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
And I'm always like mystified by that reaction. I'm just like, okay, maybe I'm not as easily offended. Maybe I just don't get my sensibilities are not what they should be or to be part of the, you know, journalistic class or whatever. But there is oftentimes a lot of sort of overwrought hysteria about, and it's been, I think, exacerbated by this campaign because of who Donald Trump is and how they see him.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry, guys. I did jump in here because Donald Trump, and this is, you guys are just talking about this, about how it's just this focus and how there's this idea of Donald, he can't be, you know, can't say anything right. He just spoke and said that he will accept the results if he wins. And all the media outlets are running and it's just all, if you think in DEFCON 1, I mean, it's just
if
crazy.
If he wins, he'll accept
the results. I will do it if I win. And it's.
But none of them, they don't realize what he's, I mean, he is a showman.
Right.
He's an entertainer.
What? Some people are saying, did Trump do this on purpose? Was he sort of like crazy like a fox, you know, to say this last night? I don't believe that. I think he just kind of said what came into his mind and the media went next. But that, Trump following on by saying, you know what, I'll accept. That is Trump sort of yanking the media's chain.
Yeah, right.
And
if you guys want to hear it, I've got it queued up here.
Let's hear it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to make a major announcement today. I would like to promise and pledge to all of my voters and supporters and to all of the people of the United States that I will totally accept the results of this great and historic presidential election if I win.
Oh my God! They got EJ Dion's head just exploded, right? I can just see it.
That is Donald Trump. Okay.
Yeah, he's just yanking
at his showmanship,
right?
Sort of finest, giving the media a big middle finger.
He's really changed the subject away from groping, hasn't he?
Well, he has indeed done that, and that's maybe a side effect that the media, you know, hadn't intended. Is now that everybody's talking about this, and again, you know, you gotta. I always try and view these things like, what are the sort of non-committed voters, the moderates, the independents, you know, because Democrats hate Trump.
Right.
And Republicans who are supporting Trump love Trump. He could say this. He could say he said a lot of other things. It's not going to change. But what about the people in the middle? How do they view this? Are they on the fainting couch over this? Are they wandering around, you know, thinking like, what's the big deal? I mean, it's not that, you know. And I think that's the question. And I'm just not sure it's as big of a deal to folks. That they are worried that somehow the republic's going to end in 19 days because, you know, if Donald Trump loses by, you know, 5 points. I mean, that's the other thing, too, right? I think one of the things that gets, I mean, if Donald Trump loses by 5 points or 7 points, Katrina Pearson, one of his national spokespeople, said, was asked this, and she said, of course, we're going to, you know, accept those results. If it's close, though, if it's, you know, 537 votes in Florida or something like that, you know, is Donald Trump going to maybe take a look at that and not accept those election results? And
he has to.
Them?
Listen.
He has to.
Al Gore.
Same way that, you know what? If Hillary Clinton comes up 537 votes short in Pennsylvania or something, is she going to accept that? Just, you know, be like, oh, yeah, of course, for the good of the Republic, I'm just going to let that one go.
No, she's going to send Bob Cramer back out there to get those votes. Jan Schakowsky's husband, flying under the radar all this time.
Tom, I got to ask you, I'd love to get your take on this. So Trump is running this line of, you know, it could be it's rigged. Yeah. Does he run the risk of people staying home because they could become, their disenfranchisement peaks, and they're just like, it is rigged. There's no way he's going to win. These polls look awful. I'm not going to waste my time on it. Or is he just that enigmatic that he's brought people in and that they're going to go in the face of this supposed rigging?
That's an excellent question. I think it remains to be seen. I mean, that is one of the risks that he runs potentially is, you know, oh, this rigged and the outcome is predetermined and all that. And if that causes some of his folks to stay home and get depressed, I mean, Trump has had throughout this entire campaign an enthusiasm gap. His folks have been more excited. His core supporters have been more excited to go vote for him than Hillary's have been to go vote for her. That has waned over the last couple of weeks. I mean, he is now basically running sort of even with Hillary on that issue about who's most enthusiastic about going out and voting. And part of that has been because of the allegations, you know, of the groping and sexual misconduct and all that has sapped some of that enthusiasm from some of Trump's supporters and excited some of Hillary's folks, got them really pissed off and ready to go out and vote against this guy. So he needs that enthusiasm gap. I think that's one of the only ways that he can get this election. You know, he has to overperform at this point. You know, he has to overperform his polls by getting out his voters. And hoping that he can win over some of these, you know, moderates and independents who will break his way in the end just because they don't want more of the same. And that's one of the risks that he runs. If he continues with this thing that it's rigged, it's done, it's over, it's predetermined, some of those folks might stay home. And in some of these key swing states, it could make a difference.
I would tend to disagree in this respect. Him, if when it was, you know, grabbing, groping, allegations of grabbing and groping, people that liked him couldn't say anything because they would be shamed socially. Right? And part of this whole Democratic and media nexus is about social shaming, like I said, like popular girls at school, you know, in the eighth grade when they can be very vicious to other kids. Now, change the subject, he's running against the media, and the media as the status quo. So now they have this to go for, and that sells all the other arguments that he can make about WikiLeaks, all these various lesions in the Democratic campaign that are just, I mean, anyone else running, like, I can't imagine the Democrats picking this candidate who is so bad and so damaged. Here's one for you, Tom.
Well, let me just add on to that, John. I mean, I think I agree with that because this has been part of Trump's playbook from the beginning. I mean, this is how he ran the primary. He said, look, the system is rigged. And guess what? His voters got mad and they didn't stay home. They got mad. They turned out and they ended up winning him the nomination. So, you know, it may have the intended effect, which is to galvanize his base and, you know, get them to the polls.
How does whoever wins, and I'm not willing to say one is going to win or lose, but whoever wins, how do they govern?
That's a great question. I mean, obviously, it's going to be very, very difficult for either one of these folks because they will enter office as the least well-liked, least well-trusted president in modern times. Right? And the most popular they're ever going to be is probably on the day that they take office, downhill from there. There probably will be no honeymoon, you know, and I think it's going to make it tough, especially if the Senate is on a razor's edge, which it probably is. And if Paul Ryan loses some heat, Republicans lose some seats in the House, you will have, you know, sort of thin majorities either way in the chambers of Congress, which will certainly not governing majorities by any stretch of the imagination. So it's going to make it really, really tough. Now, some people suggest that, I mean, you can look at these two candidates and argue sort of round and square, right? Some people will suggest that Hillary Clinton, she gets in there, third term of Barack Obama, she's going to push all the same policies. Republicans are going to go to their corner retreat, and it's going to be more the same gridlock, dysfunction, partisanship. other people I've talked to in Washington say, you know what, Hillary actually has pretty good working relations with Republicans in Washington, D.C., you know, on K Street, on the Hill, and she may be able to actually do what she did as senator and get some things done. They could find some common ground in, on tax reform or criminal justice reform, and she might actually be able to, you know, govern.
Or sell it. Sell the perception that she's governing.
Exactly. Right. I mean, part of that would include, though, I think, her sort of giving the finger or a stiff arm to the left-wing base of her own party. I'm not sure she's willing to do that or able to do that, depending on the outcome of this election. So, and, you know, Donald Trump, you look at him and you think, my gosh, you can certainly see how a Trump presidency would be, you know, him trying to govern would be just a total train wreck, right? Well, I mean, people would say, oh, he's just, you know, because of his thin skin and the way that he, you know, operates.
DEFCON 4, right. DEFCON 4. To Atreya. Yeah, right.
The other side of that coin is that if Trump is really, really is a deal maker, like he says he is, and he goes to Washington, I mean, he is much more so than Hillary Clinton. Trump is very heterodox in his position, very unorthodox, right? So he could go in there and sit down with Democrats on trade, and he could go in there and sit down with Republicans on tax reform, and he might be able to actually discombobulate the system and forge some interesting bipartisan relationships to get some stuff done on some of these major issues.
Either way, there's going to be a transition, a transformation in politics. I don't think we've seen the end of it. We're just seeing really the beginning stages of it, aren't we?
I agree.
You know, maybe a Midwest party, like a Heartland party, and the Coastal Elites party.
Well, I nominate John Cass to carry that banner.
I would be the Heartland candidate with Tom Bevin, and our policy would be superior steakhouses in every town.
Free steak for everyone?
No, I said superior. I mean, good ones.
No,
they'd have to pay. We're not communists, for God's sake.
I'm all for that. Steak and red wine, too.
There you go. And my turn next. All right, Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tommy.
All right, bye. I'd like to thank Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune editorial board, my pal Jeff Carlin of Rokan and Anna's show, WGN, and the Chicago Cubs for making it interesting, whichever way this goes, and for Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton for making it interesting, whichever way it goes. Okay? Just remember this. They could say they're from Pennsylvania. They could say they're from Ohio. They could say they're from California, from Finland, for God's sake, Spain, whatever they want to say. But there's only one way to get there, and that's the Chicago.